We welcome you into one of these hours of practical Christianity. I want you to come and bring your mind and your heart, no matter what part of the Christian church that is your heritage, no matter what part of life you're from, no matter what your experiences, high or low. Maybe you're one that has turned away from Christianity. You found it didn't work for you. But I tell you, it can work. It can begin today. For this philosophy is a philosophy of love. And it's very practical in all of our lives. So come now and enter in with us and a great host of people who believe that God made each of us to be successful and healthy and happy. There are many creeds and many dogmas in this world, and many of them hold the words of God and the love of Jesus Christ. I want to read you a poem right now that will give you a hint of what I want to tell you in the moments ahead. It was written by Edwin Markham, and this is what it says. There is a destiny that makes us brothers. No man goes his way alone. All that we send into the lives of others comes back into our own. This is the story of the Master, only paraphrased, when he said, "What you sow, so shall you reap." But sometimes we don't realize the quality of seed. Sometimes we're not aware of the barrenness of the ground. But we can know. We can learn. Sometimes we think that life is just something that happens and we grow up and we do what comes naturally. But I tell you, there are laws of living. I tell you, there are systematic and wonderful ways of thinking. And the beautiful thing is that you can learn them, each one of us. There may be something within you that says, "Oh no." But if you listen closely, there's something in you that says, "Oh yes." You can be a better person. You can find joy and happiness. You can be healed. You can be prosperous. You can be all that you innately feel you want to be. You can be equal with every situation in life. You can be an overcomer. So let this little poem be your creed for the moment. There is a destiny that makes us brothers. No man goes his way alone. All that we send into the lives of others comes back into our own. This morning our lesson is entitled, "How Many Masters Do We Serve?" And of course it comes from the scriptural verse of Jesus that you can't serve two masters. You can't serve God and mammon. Now you know that. You've heard that since Sunday school days. But what does it mean? Is it one of those teachings that we say, well, I wish I could, but it's too idealistic, and so we just turn around and tiptoe off into our own realm of influence? Or does this saying have a real meaning, a meaning that we can use for the benefit of ourselves and the benefit of all mankind? I think it does. Now, I think there are a few things I should say before I tell you the secrets that I want you to know. First of all, most of us were brought up in parts of the church that were always fighting the devil. We learned to say quite early in life, well, the devil made me do it. Or if we couldn't explain something, we said, well, the devil did it. One scholar said once that really, religion was invented to tell us and to explain to us the reason for evil in the world. Well, I know there's evil. I know there's degradation. I know there's man's inhumanity to man. This is no secret. We know this. But if we look at all of the evil, if we look at all of the ridiculousness in life, we find out that it's all man-made. Oh, I remember once when a tree fell over on a fence in our yard. It was our neighbor's tree, and the insurance man came out and said, it's an act of God. I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it because I was there when the rain fell and softened the roots, and the gravity, force of gravity, the centrifugal force of the wind, pushed the tree over on our fence and it fell. That was no act of God. That was just an insurance man's way, present company excluded, an insurance man's way of saying, you don't get anything. You should have read the fine print. Well, I think in life we have to read fine print and we have to be aware of what life really means. Now, so if we find that many of our ancient creeds and dogmas were made to try to explain to us where evil comes from, if we find out that the great message of the Christian church is a message of salvation, and I believe in salvation, but what are we to be saved from and what are we to be saved for? To be saved from a devil, that which might come right out of Greek mythology, that we could blame everything on, and we are always looking for a fall guy in life. We say now, maybe it isn't the devil, but many moderns say, well, it's my genes, it's my early environment, it's the establishment, it's this, it's that, it's something else. But I don't believe that either, because I think we either can believe in the reality of the universe, and it's all around us, it's self-evident, or we can believe that we are the masters of our fate, that we have great control in our lives. Now, there was a man, his name is Dr. J.B. Rhine. For many, many years, 30-some years, he was a professor and then a medical researcher at Duke University. And he brought into being a whole new way of thinking, because Dr. Rhine said, no, man is and has great innate powers within himself. He doesn't have a master out here and a master in here. Man has the ability to create mental energy. Professor Rhine, many of us know this because it's been widely publicized. It's an astounding fact. Dr. Rhine took pieces of paper, for instance, and he kept the front of it blank, and he would write numbers or letters on the back. And he trained people over a period of years without knowing what was on the back to be able to recite it, to be able to tell. And they could do this in phenomenal sequence, and they could do it with great efficiency. He could hold up the card that was blank, and they would tell him what was on the back. And what he simply did was to show this. Well, up to that time, we believed, we had discovered, for instance, how the glands regulate the personality through chemical secretions. We have shown that a child's mind matures as the brain develops. Medical science had shown us that certain mental functions are linked with specific areas of the brain, and if that particular area was destroyed, why, then those corresponding functions would stop. In other words, science believed that it had accounted for all the processes of thought and action, that it could show that everything was on a material basis. And then a man like Dr. Rhine comes along, and many before him and since. And they show us, and they prove, that knowledge can be acquired
without the use of the senses. There are times when you know. There are times when the phone rings and you know who's on the other end. There are times when you know things that are happening that are thousands of miles away. There are times when you know things about yourself, wonderful things, that you didn't read out of any book. This is what Dr. Ryan brought to our attention. That the mind can influence matter without physical means. Do you believe that? That the mind can influence matter without physical means? I do. You can take a little plant and you can put it where the sun and the water and the nutrients can all get to it. But there's an added ingredient. You can bless it. You have that power. Each of us have the mental energy. Now, somebody might say, well, Reverend Stevens is trying to make everything just mental and mind. Oh, no, I'm not. I know where all power comes from. I say it comes from God. But I say that it has to work through our minds and our hearts, or it isn't going to get through us to be directed as it should be. Dr. Ryan wrote a book entitled The Reach of the Mind. And this is what he says. As a result of thousands of experimental trials, we find it to be a fact that the mind has a force that can act on matter. There must therefore be an energy convertible to physical action, a mental energy. What is this mental energy? Well, I would, not being a scientist, I would say this mental energy is desire. It is interest. Wherever you put your interest, wherever you put your desire, you're going to begin to build something. Jesus said, don't put your treasure out here where the moths and the thieves and rust can get in and consume. He said, but put it in your heart. Because he said, wherever your treasure is, that's where you're going to be. And that's very true. There are many of us who are trying to do wonderful things in outward ways. But really, we must find that the greatest thing we can do is to make ourselves a better person, a better Christian, a more loving person. That's the first way to make this world a better place in which to live. I often think of the people that will never see a Bible. I think of the people, even in our own culture, who never opened the Bible. But I think each one of us can be a Bible. And each one of us can be the life of Christ. And each one of us can be a disciple of love. And we can show things that maybe it would be easier to show by our lives than it would be if we tried to convert people to creeds and dogmas and traditions. Now, they're all wonderful and fine, but there are many people that aren't going to come in contact with them. I think it means, in short, that man is not at the mercy of blind chance and fate, that we can control our own destiny. I believe when God said that man had dominion, he really has, and we can exercise that dominion. And it isn't difficult for us to do that. If life begins with anything, I always feel that life begins with movement. For instance, when you plant a little seed down in the ground, there's something that starts moving in that seed. It's the same thing that Dr. Ryan called the mental energy. It's interest and desire. When something starts moving in you, something begins to happen. For instance, when you put the little seed in the ground, movement starts. We call it germination. I don't know how it happens. I'm sure people can explain it. Maybe they can and maybe they can't. It doesn't matter. But it begins to germinate. And what happens? That little seed begins to draw to it exactly what it has need of. The nutrients and the minerals and the moisture that it needs. When you get real interested in something, when you have a great desire, you begin to draw things into you. There's another man I want to talk about this morning, and his name is Alexander Carrel. And Dr. Carrel made many experiments, and one of his greatest experiments as the head of the research Rockefeller Center was to take the vital organs of a chicken and keep that chicken alive 30 years without a head, without really a body, without any wings or feet. He kept that chicken alive. And how did he do this? His theory was that if you could take the basic organism of a living thing, you could keep it alive forever because life reproduces itself. The only thing you must do is this. This is the secret. You must keep feeding it nutrients, and you must keep the process of elimination open. Keep the pores clean. Keep the organism clean. Keep all the old waste eliminated. And he found after 30 years, he pulled the plug, and he had proven his theory. When I was a boy, and we children used to come in crying or complaining, my father had a wonderful saying. He'd say, "Well, you just have to take the lumps in life." Well, I learned what he meant. You know what he meant. To take your lumps in life. What is a lump? Well, a lump is something that can get inside of us sometimes. You ever had a lump in your throat? Of course you have. You ever had a lump in your heart? Sure you have. If you ever get a lump in a vein, you really know it. A lump is simply something that you've taken in. It's a congestion. I've talked to many of the physicians in this congregation, and one of the things that every doctor will tell you in some way is that disease is congestion, and that all ailments are simply intensification of congestion. Somewhere in body, in mind, in consciousness, there is a blockage. Whether it be a blockage in consciousness, a blockage in our physical body, and that is called congestion. So you see why we don't want to take the lumps of life. We want to dispel them. We want to dissolve them. We don't want them to get inside of us. Because as Dr. Carroll proved with this little chicken apparatus, that we can live forever and we can function forever if we can be free. If we can allow ourselves to forgive ourselves and forgive others. If we can keep from being resentful and fearful. I have so much to tell you this morning. My notes say, if you're in a hurry at this point, hurry on. So if I do that, you have to hurry up with me. There are two great laws of life that I want to remind you of this morning. And these laws of life have to do with giving you dominion. Oh, not so you can do your own thing, because nobody really does their own thing. That's a very selfish thing to say. All of us are a part of the harmony. All of us are a part of the universe. We really are one body as cells in that body. If I hurt someone, I only hurt myself. If I love someone, in the last analysis, I love that great goodness within myself. So this is what I want you to know. What are these laws? Well, the first one is that like attracts like. That like attracts like. When that little seed is planted in the ground, when you are planted in a new marriage, when you are planted in a new job, when you are planted in a new area, when you go home, or when you begin in a few moments after our lesson of living again out in your environment, you have the ability, this law of attraction, you have the ability to attract to you whatever you have need of. Isn't it interesting that we can say to someone, "I don't like you anymore. I don't want to be married to you anymore. I don't like all your bad habits. I don't like this and this and this and this. I'm through." And so we go off and we look around for someone else. And zap! We have someone attracted to us exactly like the person we just said we didn't like. This can happen again and again and again. It's the law of attraction. You can only attract what you are in life. Whomever you meet in life, you can only see yourself. Unless you're pretending. And that's awful. Because when you pretend, you attract people that pretend to you. And so you fool each other. And that's why you say after you maybe have married someone, "You've changed." And they say to you, "Well, you've changed too." We have to be ourselves. The only reason we're not ourselves is because we feel inferior. The only reason we tell things we shouldn't is because we don't think the wonderful facts of our own existence are interesting. So I believe that we can understand what it means for like to attract like. And I believe each one of us right now are continually attracting what we are. And the only way you can change what you're attracting is to change within yourself. Think love. Think kindness. Think forgiveness. Think peace. Take moments out of your day and sit down and think and feel love. You'll find as you do this, you will change yourself. God will help you because God is love. And as we think on God, we become God. We become that portion of God that we have the ability to receive. This is how we bring ourselves up out of the darkness and out of the depths. So let us now think about the great first law of all nature. It is the law of like attracts like. A little electron, the smallest particle of matter, has within itself probably the cosmos of the universe. It is a universe in miniature. And that little electron is whirling and moving, and it has a certain rate of vibration. And that electron attracts other electrons of like manner. That's what the whole universe is made of. So we say, we know that all the H2O stick together. And we know that all this sticks together, and all the iron comes together, and all the copper and all the gold. So does all the kindness and all the peace and all the joy, because it attracts. If you're filled with hostility, everyone in your world will be hostile. If you hate everyone, you'll find out that everyone will hate you, and you'll run into all kinds of difficulty, because each of us create the path that we walk on, and each of us create the environment that we're in. Each of us live in our own world. When we understand this, I think we've come to a great place in life. What's the second secret that I want to tell you this morning? The second secret is this. It's the second great law of nature and God. And this law is, everything increases after its kind. Everything increases after its kind. There isn't one of the great multiplying miracles in the Scripture where Jesus produced ice cream cake and coleslaw from bread and fishes. It just didn't happen. You can only create after its kind. So therefore we find we can take just a little bit of good and we can concentrate on it, we can bless it, we can love it, and it will begin to multiply. You can change your life before this hour is over. You can change your life in a split second when you begin to realize how much dominion and how much authority you have in your life. When you realize that there is no devil out here. Oh, there's a devil, but it's ignorance and fear, and it's in us all. It's inborn in us, and we have to get rid of it. There are ideas that we've been brought up in our culture and our families and our friends, and they're in us and they're working. Just like a neurosis can be created in the mind and even create another personality. Some of us feel that evil is really real. I can tell you this. In the midst of the last depression in the 30s, there were people that made millions because they wouldn't believe the false ideas of poverty. I can tell you this, there are people of every age and every culture in every part of our system that have risen to tremendous heights when everybody else was given up. Because they believed they could. They created this within themselves. The first law of nature is that like attracts like. The second law is that everything increases after its kind. You have in your fingertips, you have in your heart right now, the seeds of anything you want to do. Well, you can start out small. You can be the kindest person on the block. You can start out small. You can give a nickel or a dime. But be glad you do it. It'll grow. It'll multiply within you. You can do all of these things, Jesus said, and greater things than these can you do. When we come to this place in life, we find that we want to know more. We say, oh, I want to read more. I want to know more. But all knowledge is within you, dear friend. I think there's only one church. There are many parts of it. And I think each one of us are in that particular classroom where we belong. And I believe that there is no high nor low in life. That eventually each one of us have to come to that place where we look at other people and we say, I'm not better than you. I'm not less than you. I am. How can I judge when I only have myself? The only reason we create judgment in our lives is because to make ourselves feel better most of the time. And the only reason we want to feel better and superior is because inside we feel inferior. And so we always have to find reasons of why we're better. That's a master. All of these negative things can be masters. But there's only one God. There's only one reality. And it flows through us all. It doesn't matter what we call ourselves or where we are from. It is the law of love. Many times I've told you that the universe is run by law. It is. I wouldn't want it any other way. But I tell you this, that it is love that activates that law and brings the law into a personal relationship with each one of us. So today, think about how many masters in your life. Tell yourself, it isn't needful. You don't have to have a devil to blame things on. You don't have to blame it on your genes. You don't have to blame it on society. You don't have to blame it on the economic system. You don't have to think about any of this. Think about the positive side. Think about the beauty and the love and the joy that you really are, that you've never yet experienced in putting it out, in expressing it. And as you think on this, you will realize that you need one master, as Jesus said, and that is the law of love working mightily in your life. Now let us pray. Let us give thanks for the love of God. Let us say, love and all the love in the universe is God in action. I enter into this moment with a feeling of love, divine love abiding in my heart. Bless, O Lord, my heart, that I might be a part of all other people. Bless, O Lord, my mind, that I might understand and be a part of your presence and your action in this world. O Lord, bless all that I do, that it be done in love and peace, and go forth to plant seeds for a better world and a better life. This we pray in the name and through the power of Jesus Christ. Amen.